the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to fight deceit.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
And by the way, I should tell you that there are a lot of people out there, many of the pundits and politicians, they say Bernie Sanders should drop out. The people of California should not have the right to determine who the next president will be. Well, let me be as clear as I can be. I agree with you. We are in till the last ballot is cast.
It's Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders speaking to supporters in California, where he heads in a couple weeks. There'll be a series of primaries and caucuses held, including California, the big state. And he doesn't plan to be out by then. At least he's saying he's going to be in until the very last ballot is cast. We're going to get our view and preview of the November elections here on this Thursday afternoon, May the 19th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. Mark and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and the Federalist will be our guests for the first half hour. After that, we'll talk about religious conservatives and the 2016 presidential race, so-called lesser of two evils, or better the devil you know, or trying to mitigate evil in the ballot box, all of those with Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org. Then Hans Feeney joins us. We'll talk about transgender advocates. He's recently written for The Federalist a column titled Why Transgender Advocates Don't Believe Anything They Say. And then in the last half hour of the program, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us. We'll do our series, Christ in the Old Testament, today. Proverbs 8, Wisdom's Call, there. Christ in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Every week, Mark and Molly Hemingway join us to talk about the upcoming November elections. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks again.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome back to you.
It's great to be here with you.
Mark, give us your analysis on Tuesday night's Kentucky and Oregon election results.
Well, I mean, just the bottom line here is that Hillary Clinton narrowly won Kentucky, and by narrowly, I mean really narrowly, less than 2,000 votes, according to the last Associated Press count I saw. And what that means in practice is they both walked out of Kentucky with the same amount of delegates. Now, as for Oregon, that was a totally different story. Sanders won there by 12 points, got an extra 70,000 votes, and picked up a number of extra delegates. But having said that, I don't know if you follow the news elsewhere, the Democratic establishment is starting to tear their hair out, because if you look at the rest of the Democratic primary going forward, Bernie Sanders has almost, it's almost a physical impossibility for him to get the delegates needed to win the nomination, and yet he insists on not just staying in the race, but actively campaigning. He made a big stink at the recent Nevada Democratic convention about how the party was allocating delegates, and which has just generally been a thorn in people's side, and the Democratic Party is starting to worry that this infighting is going to destroy party cohesion in a way that's going to hurt November, because there have been threats and all kinds of other malfeasance.
So moving into Washington State next Tuesday, then on June 7th, this is the big day. We got six primaries and caucuses all on top of each other, California included. Can Clinton stop Sanders' momentum, even if it doesn't mean that she's going to forfeit the nomination? Can she stop him?
Well, this is the argument that Sanders wants to make. He wants to make the argument that, even though Hillary Clinton is way ahead in delegate count, as the primary process has dragged on, it's been him that's been, you know, uniting the party, and movement is starting to come toward him to the point where he can go to the convention and make the case that it would be a big mistake to nominate Hillary Clinton because she's, you know, unpopular with the general electorate, and the party itself, as time has worn on, you know, seems to be trending more toward him. But I just don't think that that is a reasonable case to make. I mean, the Democratic Party establishment is incredibly powerful, if you, especially when it comes to the primary process, way more so than the quote-unquote Republican establishment that is so reviled. So the idea that these power brokers are going to, you know, voluntarily abdicate some, you know, weird argument to this, you know, socialist from Vermont, this is the direction the party needs to go in, particularly when it's a reasonably radical direction in terms of Sanders being much more left-wing in policy than Clinton is, and when you're also looking toward a general election where the electorate isn't going to be nearly as liberal, I just don't think that Sanders has a shot at persuading anybody of that the party should unite around him at this point.
Molly, why is Sanders staying in the race?
Well, for him, this isn't really about winning the nomination so much as building a movement. And he has been an ideologically motivated person his entire career and has never had the success that he's having at this particular moment. It would make no sense for him to quit when he's getting so many people into a cause that, you know, went from being deeply unpopular in this country to now being, he's got a major movement behind him. And I think it's also interesting to think of it in terms of the general trajectory of the campaigns. You know, you see with what happened with Donald Trump, that was a very traditional approach to winning a nomination. Yes, he had a lot of help from the media, and he had a lot of name recognition and whatnot, but he sort of slowly and systematically vanquished all his opponents. With Hillary, she started out as the completely presumptive nominee, so strong that she couldn't even get any strong people running against her. And she has, here we are midway through May, and she still hasn't locked up the nomination. And it's getting worse. And I mean, Kentucky, she did technically win by less than one percentage point. And that's a state with a strong minority population. She's normally doing very well in states with large minority populations. She's getting worse and worse. And so she needs to win not just the delegates, but the argument. And she's having trouble with the argument. Well, Sanders is doing really well with the argument.
How do you explain that, Molly? Because back in 2008, Clinton v. Barack Obama in Kentucky won 65%. 8 years later, she gets a mere plurality. She can't even crack 50%. How do you explain it?
She's a really bad candidate. I mean, she has no... It's really an under-discussed issue how bad of a candidate she is. She doesn't seem to like people. That comes through in her public speeches and in her just retail political work. Her husband was really good at making people feel like he liked them. That might not mean that he's more psychologically healthy, but he was really good at that type of work. She's bad. She doesn't have a message that makes sense. She has a record of a lot of failure and weakness in what she wants to trumpet is that she was Secretary of State. She's a really bad Secretary of State. She wants to make it all about how she's female, but that's a really bad argument to make. I think people have some level of exhaustion about it, or she might have maximized how much she can get out of that. And it only exacerbates her problem with getting men to vote for her. So she just has bad instincts. And she's running against very difficult, charismatic opponents in Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, as weird as that may sound.
Mark, given Sanders' population, particularly with young voters, what does that say to you, if anything, about the long-term future of capitalism in the United States? A lot of people like this, a lot of young people, future voters, like this socialist.
Right. Well, you know, it's hard. At this point, I'd say it's hard to read too much into this. I mean, I think a lot of people are just unhappy and they see dysfunction and so they're looking for alternatives, but they're not necessarily thinking too deeply about the consequences of these things. You know, you see, you know, discontent obviously in the form of Trump support on the right, and you see, you know, younger people who just for whatever aesthetic reasons just sort of refuse to identify with Republicans these days, in part because I think the media and popular culture have really gone after conservatism. So I don't know. I mean, they support Sanders, and they say, oh, well, this is progressive, and all these, you know, buzzwords that make it sound good. But I seriously doubt that a lot of millennials could give you a clear idea of how Bernie Sanders' policies are supposed to work. Once we had an actual major public debate about these things rather than it just being, you know, posturing, I'm not sure whether the support would be there for him. Just to give you an example of what I'm talking about, one of Sanders' most popular policies that's been attracting a lot of support from young people is he's been railing on and on about the high rate on student loans. And he, one of his standard applause lines in his stump speech is, why is it that interest rates for student loans are higher than car or auto loans, and this is somehow unfair? Well, I mean, has Bernie Sanders looked at the default rates, respectively, on those things? Does he know the difference between a secured and an unsecured loan? I can't repossess a college degree, so therefore, people aren't going to treat their student loans with the same degree of respect necessarily that they treat a car or auto loan. And correspondingly, the default rates on student loans are a lot higher than either car auto loans or mortgages. Again, this is good rhetoric for students and younger people, but it is not necessarily the kind of thing I think that suggests people have really thought through his policies and the consequences of them.
I'd like to note that this is not just a problem for Bernie Sanders supporters. You see it also in Donald Trump supporters. There is a high degree of frustration with the government combined with a desire to see the government doing more. And people articulate that in different ways, or they vote for different candidates, but that's a very dangerous place to be for a republic that used to describe itself as self-governed and had people that believed that we were to be a self-governed people with extremely strong institutions of family, church, and other mediating institutions. We're seeing a complete decline of the republic, and it's playing out on both sides of the political spectrum right now, with people having no ability to be self-governed and seeking government solutions and seeking strong men to help navigate through the chaos left behind by a culture that has completely rotted from within, and our educational system is bad. It's just bad all around. I don't mean to be too doom and gloomy, but this is not just a problem for millennials who cotton to Bernie Sanders. This is throughout the republic.
A question for both of you. Very well known sector of the electorate identify with the hashtag Never Trump. Is there in the Sanders support, with no hashtag as that I know of, is there a Never Hillary contingent? Molly first.
I think that there definitely is a Never Hillary contingent within the Bernie Sanders support, and there is something that's happening in just a basic realignment of our political situation. It's probably not too big numerically, but it's very important in terms of ideology. You're seeing people who had so much been aligned with one party or the other sort of transcending those parties, or realizing that their work with a given party isn't working out for them anymore. And it's a very good opportunity for blowing up the entire system. But I think it's on both sides. I don't think that either side is that numerically strong. I think, you're seeing a lot of Republicans just acquiesce to Trump or try and rationalize or justify it. The people who are ideologically consistent are very strong, though.
Molly Hemingway is our guest, senior editor for The Federalist. Mark Hemingway alongside, senior writer for The Weekly Standard. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections. When we come back, what do Bernie Sanders voters do with themselves after the Democratic National Convention?
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
How is confessional Lutheranism similar to and different from American evangelicalism, Roman Catholicism, and Eastern Orthodoxy? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is titled Being Lutheran. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 800-325-3040. Save $2 by ordering Being Lutheran during the month of May. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Being Lutheran.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Oh Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, talking about the November elections, our weekly conversation with Mark and Molly Hemingway. Mark, a senior writer for the Weekly Standard, Molly, senior editor for The Federalist. Mark, continuing our conversation, if you will, about the Bernie Sanders voters. He says, of course, that he's in it to the last ballot. If this is true, what do Sanders voters do with themselves after the Democratic National Convention?
Well, that is a really good question, and certainly the Democratic Party is going to have to wrestle with that. And they're caught between a rock and a hard place, because Sanders has succeeded on one level, which is that he's pushed Hillary Clinton far to the left on a number of issues like guns and trade and some other things that she went into places she did not want to go policy-wise in the primary, and she's going to have to moderate those stances, I think, for the general. I mean, there are too many swing states like Colorado, New Hampshire, and other things where, you know, gun rights are important for her to have, you know, to not do something about her guns rhetoric that she staked out to against Sanders. So at the same time, she's also got to worry about locking down her base now, which is why the Democratic establishment right now has started to get really angry and upset with Sanders, because they see the damage this has done, because Hillary Clinton's never going to be able to fully tack to the center in a way that she needs to really to have the best shot at winning if she can't, you know, count on those people coming home to her. And at the same time, Donald Trump isn't like a huge conservative when you actually get down the brass tacks and look at his policies. It's very conceivable that a lot of Democrats could end up voting for Trump. So I wouldn't want to be in this situation where I'm a campaign advisor trying to tell her what to do about this, because it's, you know, sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't at this point.
Molly, I had a question about the president's recent executive order on transgender use of bathrooms in public schools. Has there been any reaction by the candidates to that executive order?
I'm not entirely sure if there has been, but I wouldn't imagine that if there was, that there would be much difference between the candidates. Donald Trump has come out pretty strongly in favor of beliefs in your mind dictating which bathroom you use and whatnot, and he is not going to be someone who will be able to understand why removing biological distinctions might be problematic for people. And Hillary Clinton is clearly on the transgender train, and so you're not going to see either of the campaigns making a big issue out of that, which is interesting, because I think the vast majority of Americans do have issues with removing biological sexual distinctions, and particularly in areas of vulnerability like locker rooms and bathrooms where you are at your most vulnerable. So it's an interesting year for such things.
What about, and I think this is going to emerge as the story of this campaign in the end, the battle over female voters. First, you, Molly, how would you, if you were getting your work done ahead, how would you write the lead on that?
Well, I'm not sure entirely, but I think that Mark and I probably disagree a great deal on this. The numbers are very bad for Donald Trump when it comes to women. He does not have strong support among women. This is typical for a Republican politician not to do well with single female voters, but Donald Trump doesn't do well with any female voters. And yet, I somehow have this suspicion that it will go better for him than people realize. I think that, again, he has been blessed to be going against Hillary Clinton, who is just a very deeply unlikable candidate and who just seems tired and exhausting and corrupt and all of these traits that don't make women terribly excited about voting for her. So I think that you might just see a big suppression of the female vote, or that it, I don't know, I don't have the data to back it up, but I just suspect it won't be as big of a problem for him as all the pundits are saying.
Mark?
Well, there's an issue with Hillary Clinton that's really interesting, and the media has been almost completely silent on it. I know feminism is trendy, and there's been a lot of talk about women voters and being significant in recent elections, but what nobody's talking about is almost as big a problem of Republicans and Donald Trump have had with women, Hillary has with men. If you look at the polls, I mean, men pretty much across the board, there's something about Hillary Clinton that they just, you know, actively dislike. And I'm sure that, like, if this were to become an issue, there would be the requisite cries of sexism and all the other things. All the other dirt would be kicked up to pretend that this isn't an issue. But the reality is that Hillary Clinton has a big problem with the fact that she just turns off men and they don't like her. So I think it'll be interesting to see how this election finally plays out. You have a candidate, again, where they both have horrible approval ratings with the overall American public, and Donald Trump has a situation where women seem to hate him with the fire of a thousand suns, and Hillary Clinton is a situation where men just seem to regard her as really, really off-putting, and it really shows if you do a deep dive in the polls.
But what I hear you saying, Molly, is that even among the female support, there may be kind of a rock-solid contingent percentage there, but even women who are voting for, planning to vote for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump, they're not super enthusiastic.
Well, certainly some of them are. Certainly there is that type of maybe aging baby boomer cohort that are really excited by Hillary Clinton, and God bless them. Every politician needs someone who's really excited about it. But I think that a lot of these polls showing that women aren't cottoning to Donald Trump are preliminary. I mean, one of the ones that comes to mind is something like 70% of Republican women, married, unmarried, what have you, were solidly against Donald Trump. But now that he has the nomination, many of them are saying, well, he's bad, but he's preferable to Hillary Clinton. And so I think that sometimes when we look at this information, it doesn't tell us what's actually going to happen on election day. And unless Clinton can give people something to get excited about, male or female, men or women, something to get excited about, I think she's just going to be struggling the entire way through to November.
Molly, in a Clinton-Trump contest for social conservatives, are issues like life, marriage, religious liberty, are they going to even be on the radar for these candidates?
I think they will be on the radar. And I think, yes, I think that Donald Trump's list of who he would nominate potentially for judges that he released this week was very instructive in this regard. Nobody believes Donald Trump knows the names that are on the list. Nobody believes he put the list together. Clearly, he just asked some people who are conservative to put the list together, but the list is great. He sabotaged his own list within 6 hours by saying he wouldn't hold to it and that maybe it would include completely different names, but it was a very important list because it showed that conservatives do have his ear. One of the things that social conservatives care about more than anything, rightly so, is not letting the courts be completely overrun by people who want to destroy religious liberty or go on attack against women and their wombs. And so it's going to be important. It's just going to be weird because nobody thinks that Donald Trump actually shares the views of social conservatives, but he might be the vehicle that people still have to work through. And so it'll be this way of talking about it, completely separate from the actual candidates, and then also combined with the fact that nobody can trust Donald Trump because he changes what he says all the time. It's going to be tricky.
Are you saying he's just literally going to be a political placeholder for those views with no confidence from those who hold those views, that he will do either, that he really believes anything consistent about them, or as president will do anything consistent about them?
Not just that, but it's going to be an open acknowledgement of that. In other words, conservatives are going to have to openly state, we know that we can't trust him, we know he might sabotage us, but this is we have a small glimmer of hope with him, and we have no hope with Hillary. And so you're going to have these really open conversations about the corruption of the whole process and how unreliable the candidates are. It's going to be very weird.
Mark, I've heard you say twice in this conversation you would not want to be in the position of being a political advisor or a candidate trying to run the candidacy for a guy like Donald Trump at this particular time, going in just the sheer mess that it is of views. He hasn't, as far as I know, I don't think he's hired kind of some key staff positions that you usually need in a general, like press liaison and things like that. He seems to want to do that himself right now. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's really hard to say anything. I remember Donald Trump said something the other day or two to the effect of, you know, everybody wanted me to settle down and act presidential and reassure people, but if I acted that way, I wouldn't be in the position where I am. And I hate to say it, but there's a lot of truth to that. You know, what worked for Donald thus far has been sort of staying true to who Donald Trump is, and Donald Trump is kind of a fly-by-the-seat-of-the-pants guy, and I think that's what a lot of people liked about him, is he didn't come across as the typical candidate. I mean, if the voters' primary concern is that somebody going to Washington shake things up, you know, the one good way of signaling you're not going to do that is you don't play by the normal rules of the press, you don't play by the normal rules of campaign organization and structure. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know how anybody can tell Donald Trump what to do. And, you know, Donald Trump has benefited greatly from a sort of ad hoc approach. But at the same time, I do wonder, as we get into the general, I think I talked about some previous program, that there are limits to this sort of, you know, fly-by-night, you know, way of doing things. You have to raise a ton of money, and you need a big organization to do that. And Donald Trump doesn't have a big fundraising apparatus. He's got no ground game whatsoever. There's no, you know, team of, you know, web engineers working on, you know, tools to drive turnout in November. So I don't know what he's going to do, but then again, I didn't think he'd make it this far. So, you know, far be it for me to second guess Donald Trump at this point.
Real quickly, with about 30 seconds, give us an update on the Never Trump movement, if you would, Molly.
Well, I'm not entirely sure how it's going. It's certainly has some strong people behind it who really were scrambling to get just any third party candidate who could keep the conservative movement going and throw a wrench into the election. Nobody's put their name in that ring yet, and they would have to do it pretty quickly for this to get going. And so I actually think this is such a crazy year that, and anything can happen, I fully expect a good third party candidate and fourth party, or just people running just this time just to preserve the conservative movement and give people who cannot in good conscience vote for either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton a way of participating in the presidential process.
You can read both Mark and Molly's columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for The Weekly Standard. Mark, thanks to you.
Thanks, guys.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Terry Mattingly. We'll be looking at religious conservatives and the 2016 presidential race. Issues Etc. is brought to you in part today by Concordia University Wisconsin Online. They offer 50 online educational options. You can find out how you can get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree by clicking the Concordia University Wisconsin logo at issuesetc.org. They'll even waive your application fee when you're into the promo code ISSUES. Lifelong Lutheran Learning, Concordia University, Wisconsin Online. Terry Mattingly is with us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about the dilemma, he says, the voting booth nightmare that many will face given the choice for president coming up and what can be done about it. Then Pastor Hans Feeney will join us. We'll talk about why transgendered advocates don't actually believe anything they say. We'll be right back. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Messiah Lutheran, Seattle, Washington. Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas. St. Paul's Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Raleigh, North Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Hancock, Maryland. Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas. St. John's Lutheran, Maple Grove, Minnesota. Grace Lutheran, Parker, Colorado. And Our Redeemer Lutheran, Harrington, Kansas. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Lutherans talk a lot about doctrine, liturgy, and vocation, but as Martin Luther would say, what does this mean? In a book called Didache, Issues Etc. regular guest Professor John Pless brings together the Bible, the small catechism, and the hymnal to teach the faith. He shows how what we believe is expressed in our daily lives and in our worship. You can find Didache online at emmanuelpress.us.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page. Or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.